the shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to Morning Tide on the Sharks Audio Network.
Star! Fabian Zetterlund on a one-time pass. Cooks the defense as a kid. Deke shoots. Deke shoots. A spectacular rush from end to end. I mean, Kyle Quinlan.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Utah, minute 28 to go. Lifts it up to the Sharks line. Glove down. Granlund's got to get off the ice. He's shaking his head. He thought a penalty should have been called. And now it's off of Zetterlund and over the glass and out of play. We get pushing. We get shedding. And we get a harmonic convergence of players right in front of the referee's crease. All of the players on the ice are scrumming right now. Zetterlund and Ian Cole have each other grabbed onto. William Eklund getting involved and dragging Sergachev, a much bigger man, away from teammates. We've got Macklin Celebrini involved right along the boards, wrestling his man down to the ice, and the crowd is on its feet here at SAP Center at San Jose as the Sharks and Utah rumbling in the neutral zone.
No, I don't think it was the frustration with the officiating. I think it was we just didn't have a killer instinct to go win a hockey game. We're still learning that. It's disappointing. Because I thought we, coming off a long road trip, you know, I thought we dug in. I thought we worked hard, did some good things tonight. But in the third period, we got to find a way to go win a hockey game.
All right, what's happening, everyone? Good morning and welcome to Morning Tide. I want to play something for you again, just right off the top.
We've got Macklin Celebrini involved right along the boards, wrestling his man down to the ice, and the crowd is on its feet here at SAP Center at San Jose as the Sharks and Utah rumbling in the neutral zone.
I believe that that is a moment that in the future we will point to and say that was when Macklin Celebrini showed that he could be the captain of the San Jose Sharks for the future. And that's not to take away anything from Logan Couture. Obviously, he is the captain of this team until he is not. I think Logan Couture's leadership, even if he's not able to play right now, is still an important factor for what the San Jose Sharks are trying to do. And I hope there is a time in the near future where Logan Couture can get out there on the ice and prove that he is, you know, still the capable captain and star-like player in the NHL that we know he is. However, Logan Couture is not going to play forever. He has not played consistently since the 22-23 season. And Macklin Celebrini stepping up last night in that moment and also barking at the refs after there was a non-call on boarding. I think those were the moments that we look to in the future, or we'll look back at in the future and say, yeah, that was when Macklin Celebrini started rising up, started showing his leadership, started showing how much of a dog he has in him. I think that we all know that Macklin Celebrini is insanely skilled, and I don't think Macklin Celebrini is a top five player in the NHL as of yet, but he does things on the ice and impacts the game in a way that I only see from the top players in the NHL. Skill level is one thing, and Macklin Celebrini has skill level through the roof. However, we know he's a highly competitive guy, akin to Logan Couture. We know he hates losing. He was pissed off after last night's game. He was very measured with his words. He didn't want to say anything that he would regret later, because I think there is a great deal of professionalism in his game as well. But the leadership for an 18-year-old, that's something that doesn't always come through right away, just because you don't want to step on anyone's toes. You don't want to be overstepping your boundaries. You don't want to try and be a tough man too early in the NHL. Well, I think last night, that was the turning point where Macklin Celebrini just said, I don't care if I am 18 years old, a rookie in this league. I'm ticked off with what I'm seeing, and I'm going to make myself vocal about it. I'm going to make my physical presence known about it. I am going to obviously just be a leader out here on the ice. And I think that's hard because, yes, his play has been of a leader, but it's hard to be the guy who's barking. It's hard to be the guy who's being physical when you know you are the youngest player in the league, the number one overall draft pick, that a lot of guys might resent what you were able to come up with in a different way versus what they had to fight and scratch and crawl to get in the NHL. These are all part of the narratives that go on in professional sports. I can compare it to the NBA, where Steph Curry, another son of a former professional athlete, was often felt to be resented by a lot of other guys in the NBA who did not grow up with the same advantages that Steph Curry did. I think that was probably a parallel that was brought along with Klay Thompson too. Both of those guys, sons of former NBA players. Macklin Celebrini is the son of a professional athlete as well, although his dad was not to the same level as a Michael Thompson or a Del Curry. He still had a dad who was a professional athlete and working in professional sports that allowed him to grow up with advantages. And so I think that all puts Macklin Celebrini in an interesting space. But last night, it was a not necessarily a the gauntlet has been dropped type moment, but I just think it was a moment where we saw an evolution in Macklin Celebrini as the overall player and leader that we're going to look back to. Just as I said that in the future, we would look back to November of 24 as a moment when San Jose Sharks changed their narrative over 1 month. I think that December 14th, Macklin Celebrini started to evolve into the future captain of the San Jose Sharks, and that's good. That's exactly what you want to see. You love seeing that leadership from the young players. You love seeing guys step up, but he had a lot to be ticked off about. One of the things that I think a lot of people are talking about is that the Sharks didn't respond enough to certain situations last night, like when Mikhail Granlund took the hit to the head and was knocked down, like when Celebrini was boarded. You know, there was also just other instances throughout the games. Guys, they took 8 penalties. They were getting called for everything. I was joking during the game. I said, welcome to SAP Center, where everything is a penalty. And yes, I am not a guy who's going to go out there and blame the refs, and I'm not going to turn this into a show about the officiating. But I think they felt hamstrung to an extent that if they did anything, they could have put themselves in a worse situation because they were constantly in the box. And as much as we want everyone to step up for everyone in every single moment, I think they could see the way was the game was being called, and they were almost picking and choosing their moments. Because let's look at the penalty summary. Luke Cunningham holding in the first period. William Eklund slashing in the first period. Second period, Luke Cunningham holding. Timothy Liljegren tripping. Nico Sturm hooking. Then we go into the third period. Mikhail Granlund high-sticking. Jan Ruda roughing. Cody Ceci high-sticking. I mean, guys, that's 8 penalties. They were penalized 2 times in the first, 3 times in the second, and 3 times in the third. And yes, it was canceled out a couple times by the opposition having guys in the box at the same time. However, I just cannot remember a game where the Sharks could do no right. We often talk about a team being able to do no wrong. The Sharks could do no right in that situation. And I think that that was one of the reasons why we didn't see more of a response, because they just didn't want to hurt their team. They didn't know if they were going to get called for, you know, roughing, or whether or not the guy who retaliated or struck first would be the one being the penalty. I think that they responded as appropriately as they could have in a lot of those situations. And the other one that I look to is a lot of people saying after the game, oh, Ryan Warsawski should have got himself tossed. I don't agree with that take, because you have to be a better team than where the Sharks are to be able to know how to respond in those situations when your team gets its head coach ejected. That's a move, in my opinion, for better teams. And better teams in their narrative know how to respond when their coach gets tossed and know how to react to the moment. But I do think that when you get in a situation like Ryan Warsawski last night, let's say he had gotten himself tossed, do you, as a Sharks fan, and let's all just be realistic for a moment and note where the Sharks are, they are not, you know, a good team. They are an entertaining team. They are a challenging team. They are a team that is improving over the long term in the season. But do they have the ability to not melt down in that moment after their coach gets ejected? Is there a risk potentially that if their coach gets ejected, even if it's a righteous ejection, that they will know how to handle that situation and not let the game get away from them? I think the answer is no. We don't know that the Sharks are that team. We don't know that they're going to be able to handle it perfectly. We don't know that they're going to have the immediate response. Things did get emotional in the late stages of the game last night, and I thought the Sharks did not let the emotions get out of control, but it was a highly emotional game. And I think that Ryan Warsawski knew that if he got himself ejected, it would have the chance to run even hotter and maybe something even worse happening. Maybe a play that leads to a suspension or, a game misconduct, something to that effect. When you are a highly competitive team, when you are a contending team, when you are full of an experienced team that understands how to manage these moments, yeah, I think a head coach will go and get himself tossed. And I would hope that in the years to come that San Jose is a team that can play that way, that can understand in those moments that Ryan Warsawski got himself tossed to invigorate the team, to give them an emotional charge, not to let their emotions get out of control. Now, that's a very fine line, and that's not where San Jose is as of yet. They are still improving as a team. They are still finding themselves. They are still, working things out and becoming a team that can play that way in the future. Now, that's not to say, by the way, that while I am not making this game about the officials, that I was enamored with the calls last night. I was not happy. I think that the NHL is as difficult a game as there is to officiate in all of professional sports. I think that 99% of the time, the officials do a very, very good job. I think that last night, I took umbrage with some of the calls. I didn't understand the lack of some of the calls. Like Mikhail Granlin getting hit to the head, like Macklin Celebrini getting boarded. Those were things that I just kind of shook my head at, and I didn't get it, and I'm never always going to get it. But the Sharks, unlike a contending team, need to be able to handle those moments. And hopefully this game can be used as a learning moment where in the future they can look back and say, okay, what did we do wrong in this game? How should we have reacted to the penalties that were coming in? How should we have responded in the moment? And I don't have the immediate answers for those because they're still a team in progress that is learning how to play the game. But yeah, be frustrated. Be overall looking for more opportunities coming up because, guys, life does not get any easier for the San Jose Sharks. We talked about this yesterday on the build-up, and I've been talking about it a lot. The schedule is an absolute grind coming up. They take on Winnipeg on Tuesday. They take on Colorado on Thursday. They are in Edmonton on Saturday. They are in Vancouver on Monday. Then they get 3 days off for the Christmas holiday, and then they're going to be hosting Vegas on Friday the 27th, hosting Calgary on the 28th, and then hosting Philadelphia to end the month and the year. And then you start off with January. This schedule is unbelievable. They host Tampa. They host New Jersey. They host Vegas. They are at Utah. And then on a back-to-back, they're home again, hosting the Wild. Then they go back out on the road. They're going to be at Detroit. They are going to be at Columbus. They are going to be at the Islanders, at Boston, at Nashville, then home against Nashville, home against Florida, home against the Pens. And then they finish off the month with Seattle. So yeah, guys, this is in no way things lightening up for San Jose. They could not afford to take suspensions. They could not afford to let that game melt down. This is still very much a challenging season for San Jose, even if they are ahead of where they were a year ago. They have much work to do. And honestly, if we look at where the Sharks have been, they were 0-7-2 to start the season, which means they are now 11-10-3 since that point. Since that 0-7-2 start, that means they've been, slightly under 500, but getting points in the majority of their games. So if you look at it, yeah, they won their last game. They lost this one. If we're looking at a two-game set, that's a 500 record. That's probably in line with where San Jose has been. And they're not fully overall a 500 team, but, for them to be going win streaking, for them to always be getting consecutive wins, they're not there as of yet. But I tell you what, I continually like what I see from San Jose. And in a game like last night, where they probably feel like they were somewhat wronged when all was said and done, let it tick them off. Let it be that which inspires them. Let it be that which spurs them towards better play going forward. Because like I said, that schedule is not going to be easy moving forward. And San Jose has more opportunities to be challenged. And honestly, I'd like to see how they respond against Winnipeg. I'd like to see how they respond against Colorado. I'd like to see how they respond against Edmonton and Vancouver. These are good teams. These are teams that have the ability to contend in the NHL. Vancouver has not been great this year, but they are a good team. Don't get it twisted. Edmonton started off slow. They've been getting better and better. Vegas has been playing phenomenal hockey. Winnipeg has been playing phenomenal hockey. Colorado, they started off slow, but they're starting to find themselves. And congrats to Mackenzie Blackwood. He had a great night last night for Colorado, only let in two. They had a win against Nashville that I'm still not going to be surprised if they go on a run at some point. But yeah, Blackwood, 39 shots against, 2 goals against, 37 saves, and 949 save percentage. Yeah, he is he's pretty good. So I hope that he helps Colorado contend. I would love nothing more than Mackenzie Blackwood to have the opportunity to make a deep run, because he deserves it at this point. The other thing that I look at is that I wonder if he'll be playing against San Jose next week. So that could be a fun angle as well. All right, let's get into some of these Sharks highlights from last night. Alex Wennberg playing a solid game, got the Sharks back in after they were down 1-0 early. Wennberg tied it at 1.
CeCe lead to Goodrow. Across the line now to Wennberg. Moving in, shooting it, score! What a great shot by Alex Wennberg, carrying to the left wing circle and ripping a wrist shot up high. It gets by Pavelka, and the Sharks, with 5:02 left in the first, have tied this game 1-1.
Alex Wennberg is a player who has really, really impressed me with their play. I think that he keeps on finding his game more and more with San Jose. He's got a better shot than I realized. He has got, you know, just very, very good hands, and his puck handling abilities have been much better than overall I expected. So it's been really fun to watch his game develop. And I hope that we get to see more of that going forward, because it just seems the deeper that we get into the year, the more game he has to offer. And on that play, he made up for a previous opportunity where he drove in and just didn't find the ability to get the shot off. There were a couple times last night where the Sharks just didn't look like they were potent enough, like they had enough of aggression. But on that play, Alex Wennberg made up for a previous possession when he came in and just couldn't find a way to get the shot off. The Sharks, in the second period, took a lead briefly as Mikael Granlin, assisted by Zetterlund and William Eklund, found a 2-1 lead.
1-1 the score here, less than 6 minutes to go. Second period, Sharks get the draw. Zetterlund carries to the slot, shoots it, blocked, Cherkachev, rebound, score! Mikael Granlin gets the rebound and sneaks it through Pamelka from the left wing side. It's Granlin, one of the Sharks' leaders, putting San Jose in front 2-1 at 14-11 in the second period.
Mikael Granlin with his 11th goal of the season. He continues to be an absolute stud for San Jose and just produces game after game after game. That shot to the head that he took late, I still don't understand how he did not get or earn a power play for the San Jose in that instance. But that's how it goes sometimes. It wasn't too long after that Nick Schmaltz found a game-time power play goal to make it 2-2. And then in the third period, it was Fabian Zetterlund. I want to talk about Fabian Zetterlund a little bit for a second here, because he'd been dropped down to the fourth line last night. They were looking for a response from him, and he played like a madman last night. And I'm not just saying that to be, you know, hyperbolic. He was playing pissed off, aggressive hockey, and that's the Fabian Zetterlund. Whether he's playing on the fourth line, whether he's playing on the Lund line, wherever else he's going to be over the course of the game, that's the Fabian Zetterlund that you need night in, night out. He was playing with speed. He was playing with aggression. He was playing with just an overall level of physicality that I really appreciated. And I think that sometimes, you know, guys look at a demotion on the lines as a punishment or something to be that effect. I don't think that's what Ryan Warsawski is trying to do in the slightest. I think he is trying to show guys, I'm going to move you down. I want you to show me why I should move you up. I want you to show me why I'm wrong. I want you to show everyone what you have in your game, what I think you have in your game. And he's not just sitting guys down. He's giving guys an opportunity to prove themselves. And yes, there's some times where you do need to sit guys down. You know, a couple or games ago last week, both Eklund and Zetterlund were sat down for the end of the first period before they went back into the game. And I think that was a moment where it was like, okay, I don't like what I'm seeing from you. I need you to go out there and give me more. I'll put you back into the game after you've been putting time out for a second. Now go show me why I was wrong to do that. Show me how good you can be. Those are the moments over the course of the game where I look at and say, yeah, that's got to be what it is. That's got to be the way you take it. Because I think the old school mentality is to pull guys from games and then sit them And I think that there are still moments where that can work. But I think Ryan Warsawski is saying, hey, I think that I have a good group of guys. I think that my guys are fighting hard. I think there are moments when I need to push them to be harder, to be better, to be more than what they've actively been. Does it help our team if I sit down some of our most talented players? No, it doesn't. And I don't think that this is a situation where it's like, I don't like that guys aren't playing hard enough. I think he knows that the guys are playing hard. I think he also sees situations where he can push buttons. I really like that aspect of Ryan Warsawski up to this point. He is not trying to get in some battle of the wills type contest. He's not trying to butt heads with his guys. He is trying to say, give me a reason to move you up. Give me a reason to give you more ice time. Go out there and show me how you do it. And I think that's an important thing to be able to do in these games. And I think that's, for Ryan Warsawski, a great thing to see that he's capable of doing at this point in his career. But Zetterlund, he made it count.
Granlund fell to the ice. Kovalenko hit hard behind the net, but the Sharks recover it. Sent by Granlund to the point. Walman, near side feet. Celebrini stops it. Throws it down low. Kovalenko's got time in front. Score! Damian Zetterlund right in front of the goal, getting a beautiful feed from Kovalenko. That's a huge power play goal at the five-minute mark of the third period. And the San Jose Sharks take the lead 3-2 over the Utah Hockey Club. And how about Damian Zetterlund? His 8-game goalless drought comes to an end.
And we talk about this. What did you just hear there from Rusinowski? His goalless streak came to an end. The button that was pushed by Ryan Warsawski led to productivity immediately. And that's what we are looking for from San Jose. That's what we are hoping. Unfortunately, from San Jose, they would see their 3-2 lead disappear about 5 minutes later to make it a 3-3 game. And then Clayton Keller on the power play that was not my favorite. Cody Ceci drawing a high sticking with about 58 seconds remaining in the game. That led to a pretty quick goal from Clayton Keller. And just like you, I thought it was not the best. You give up a power play opportunity to the opposition in the final minute of the game. Even if you do go into overtime at that point, the other team's still going to be on the power play when it starts. Yeah, I think that the Sharks should walk out of this game frustrated, upset, angry, and not think about that game again. Use the anger, the frustration to motivate them to a greater performance coming up against Winnipeg on Tuesday night. That's the only appropriate response. I wish there was some sort of grievance they could file. I wish there was more that could be done. The game is over and done with, and I think San Jose probably just needs to put it behind them and move forward. Let's get into some of this post-game reaction from head coach Ryan Warsawski. He was asked in the post game about the team's killer instinct or lack thereof.
Well, we got to learn how to win and learn how to win in different ways. And we've seen it a little bit through this year, but it's just not consistent enough. We need our leadership group to step up and help our young players. And we need, everyone to do their job in certain areas a little bit more consistently.
And I think that it's important that he pointed out that they have at times shown that killer instinct in terms of the ability to win games. And that game in St. Louis, that was a difficult game that nothing was guaranteed for San Jose. They had to go there and fight for it and earn it and battle until the end to get that 3-3 and 500 road trip. That was an important game for San Jose. That does not mean that they have the ability to do that in every single game. It does not mean that at every moment they're going to be able to figure out what they can do in every single situation. This is what we often maybe overlook when we talk about the Sharks being a team that is learning in real time. Just because they've been able to do it in one game does not mean they've been able to do it in all games, because I think we can point to a number of games this year where they have been highly competitive but were not able to walk away with the win. We look at that last road trip, the game against Carolina. They were in that. They gave themselves an opportunity, but they saw how hard it is to win, especially on the road against top-level opposition. You look at, the game they were able to win in overtime against Washington. That was one where they were able to find that response. We go back to the month of November. Obviously, a lot has changed, but let's just look at that game against Vancouver. They were able to tie it 2-2 late, but they couldn't find the ability to get themselves a win late. They couldn't get that game-tying goal. In fact, it went from 2-2 to 3-2. And, you know, just that type of a letdown late in the game is not going to do you well. I think we look at that game at Philadelphia that they lost in the shootout. The 3-2 loss to New York. The shootout loss to Pittsburgh. The 5-2 loss to Dallas. The shootout loss to St. Louis. The tight loss to Buffalo. I mean, the loss to Ottawa, even more recently. Yes, the Sharks have had some great performances intermingled there where they've been able to get wins and points more consistently. But again, we point to that idea of how hard it is to win in the NHL and that the Sharks, in being able to win some of these games, are not going to be able to win all of these games. And that's what learning to win in the NHL is all about. The Sharks can do it sometimes, but the great teams are able to do it all the time. And I think that's one of the more important aspects that I look to from San Jose, is how many of these tight games are they able to win. And right now, they are not winning the majority of them. They've been able to earn a lot of points in a lot of games as of late, which is good. That's the progress. And getting those games that previously would have been way out of hand, turning those into one-goal games. But the difference is winning those one-goal games. That's what the best teams in the NHL do. They win the one-goal games, they give themselves the opportunity to win, and they find ways to take control of those games. It's easier to say than it is to actually do, but that's the next step in the evolution of San Jose. I mean, let's just look at the tight losses since November. A 3-2 loss to Vancouver, a 4-3 shootout loss to Philadelphia, a 3-2 loss to New York, a 4-3 loss to the Pens, a 3-2 shootout loss to St. Louis. You look at the 4-3 loss to Ottawa. Then you go into the month of December. We're already at 6, by the way. You look at the 3-2 loss to Carolina. You look at the 4-3 loss to Utah. That's 7 games decided in a shootout or by one goal. Yeah, that's a huge difference. You win half of those games, and the Sharks have a much different outlook. And then if you're a really good team, you're probably winning the majority of those games. Also, before we run out of time here, I talked to Matthew McConnell, the TV play-by-play voice of Utah, and asked him about his thoughts on Macklin and his impact on the league up to this point. Matt had some great thoughts to offer.
Well, I've watched him a couple of times, and you know, I always enjoy listening to Randy Hahn on the TV side and Dan Ruzanowski, my good friend, on the radio side as well. Skill. Incredible skill. And I think he is a generational talent. You know, we're having a discussion at practice today of you know, who's better? Is it going to be Macklin Celebrini or Connor Bedard? And the general consensus from people that I was talking to was that it could very well be Celebrini, because he's more of a complete player. That, you know, these people were telling me that they think he'll be more of a complete player as time goes on than a Connor Bedard. But, you know, just listening to head coach Andre Tourigny, and he was asked that question this morning by some of the local media of what he thinks about Celebrini, and already he's a guy that is driving the analytics, and I don't have to tell you, you already know that, Tad, but if you look at the analytics of the Sharks from day one of the, you know, start of the season, a lot of their analytics and categories are in the bottom five of the league. But if you go back to when Celebrini came back into the lineup, you know, chances off the rush, you know, things like that, they're you know, generating offense, they're a top five team in the league. So to me, that just screams Macklin and what he's meant to this lineup. And it's, I'm really interested to see how that's going to translate tonight, because Arizona has been a really good team on the road, especially in the neutral zone. You know, they've got a lot of speed, and I just think it sets up for a very, very interesting night. But yeah, Macklin Celebrini is a phenomenal player. And if you can follow up with him in the vein of a Patrick Marleau or a Joe Thornton and some of the great players that have come through San Jose, mm-hmm. then you know, the rebuild is progressing just fine, if you ask me.
So it is fun to always get other people's thoughts from around the league to see how they're reacting to everything that San Jose is doing. And, you know, that's two really good, entertaining one-goal games between Utah and San Jose this year. If we look at the standings in terms of where Utah is at this point, they are sitting at 14-11-5, 33 points on the year. You know, they've got more wins than losses, with some overtime losses in there as well. I think that that's relatively a decent measure for San Jose, who after their 0-7-2 start have been playing closer to that record of Utah. Obviously, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but it shows San Jose is, in my opinion, heading in the right direction. All right, we're out of time. I will see you all on Tuesday afternoon as we get ready for the Sharks to take on Winnipeg. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.